But first, I want you to hear something. It might do your spirit good. Come, sit here beside me."
Ulfgar shook his head, but sat down.
"Now, Peter," the lady whispered, "the sunbird."
Peter drew in a deep breath, sat up straight, cocked his head back, and began the song. The hall fell silent. Even the servants stopped, all of them listening in stunned silence as his song echoed and resonated around the chamber, the acoustics of the dome amplifying the tune, and the green ambient light of the pool brightening in response. Peter finished and looked around, expecting more applause. Instead, he was met by faraway eyes, half-opened mouths, some of them even weeping. Peter wondered what he'd done. He glanced at the lady, unsure, saw that she too had tears in her eyes.
"That was beautiful, Peter," she said,
and her wonderful smile fell on him, and he knew he'd done well.
"Truly breathtaking,"
the old fairy lady blurted out, dabbing away at her eyes.
"Ulfgar," the lady said, "does his song not touch your heart?"
Ulfgar looked as though he'd drunk sour milk. Hissi stood up and began to clap. The rest followed his lead, all except for Ulfgar, who sat stone-faced, digging his nails into his palms. Peter was brought a plate of food. One sullen-faced servant actually smiled at him and slipped him a honey pie. Peter ate his fill and then some, and soon the drone of warm conversation, the soft music, and hypnotic glow of the pool made him drowsy. He rested his head against the lady's breast. The lady slipped her arms about him and began to softly twirl his hair. She smelled of pond water and honeysuckle, and these scents, like his mother's sweet milk of so long ago, filled him with contentment. He was where he belonged, by the lady's side, for always and forever. Hissi slid over a few chairs and began to flirt with a blushing elven maiden. Tagnost came around, taking a seat next to the lady. He leaned over and spoke low.
"My lady, I would speak with you."
The lady sighed.
"You cannot stand the sight of me being happy, not even for a moment. Can you, you fretful old goat?"
Tagnost shook his head sorrowfully.
"There is nothing I wish more than your happiness. But things are worse than we feared."
"Yes, I know. I read that much in your eyes."
Tagnost let out a sigh.
"These are ill times, m'lady."
"The menkind?"
"Christians. They're determined to rid the land of any who worship the Horned One, murdering all the druids, burning the temples, sometimes whole villages, and knocking over the standing stones."
The lady's face hardened.
"This god of peace and love certainly likes to bathe the land in blood."
Ulfgar's eyes lit up. He leaned over.
"Now is the time to take the folk of Avalon to war. Now, before it's too late. Now, while we still have allies in the world of menkind."
The lady looked at him sadly.
"Ulfgar, why are you in such a hurry to abandon your youth? The weight of the world will be on your shoulders soon enough. Then you'll yearn for these days. What I wouldn't do to have one carefree day of my youth back."
Ulfgar grimaced.
"Modron, I don't see what my age has to do with any of this."
Peter looked up.
"The bad men? Are they coming here?"
"No, Peter," the lady said. "Not here. They can't come here. I would never allow it."
She handed him a cream puff and sat him on the floor.
"Ulfgar, do me this favor. Take the boy here out into the yard with the other children. Go and play."
Peter's ears perked up. There were other children to play with?
"I am not a nursemaid," Ulfgar snapped.
I mean you, Ulfgar. You go and play. Run around, build something, break something. Climb a tree, get dirty, get in some trouble, have some fun.
Ulfgar looked at her as though she'd lost her mind.
Just try it, for once. For me?
No. I wish to hear of Tagnost's travels.
You will hear everything in good time. Your mother will see to it. For now, I wish you to take Peter to the courtyard.
Ulfgar didn't move, just stared at her.
Ulfgar, please, we can talk later. I promise.
Ulfgar looked as though someone were twisting a knife in his gut.
Fine,
he said, forcing the word out through clenched teeth. The lady touched the tall boy's arm.
Ulfgar, I hope to Avalok that you wake up and see what that woman has done to you. I hope you see it before all of your youth is lost.
Ulfgar turned and headed for the door. Peter glanced at the lady, unsure. She nodded, and he followed the boy out from the chamber. Peter caught up with Ulfgar in the hall. The tall boy stood studying an intricately woven tapestry. The scene was of a massive, caped lord holding a long black sword and wearing a helmet with great elk horns jutting up from either side. The helmet covered his face, but his eyes glowed out from the visor. Peter heard the distant calls of children coming from somewhere down the way. Peter cleared his throat.
Ulfgar?
The tall boy didn't respond, his eyes lost in the tapestry.
Hey ho, Ulfgar,
Peter called.
You will address me as Lord Ulfgar, the tall boy said, without taking his eyes from the tapestry.
Lord Ulfgar, can we go play now?
This is my father, Ulfgar said. The Horned One. He rules the forest.
Ulfgar moved down to the next tapestry.
And this is my mother.
He inclined his head toward the portrait. A thin-faced woman with piercing eyes glared back at Peter. He felt the woman's eyes were judging him, staring right through him.
Queen Eilin of the elven line of Norenthal.
Peter thought he detected a sneer in the tall boy's tone, and wasn't sure if the boy revered the queen or resented her. Maybe both, he thought.
Their lineage makes me a lord.
He looked at Peter as though expecting something. When I come of age, I shall rule all of Avalon.
Sure, okay,
Peter said, nodding.
Can we go play now?
Try, Lord Ulfgar, may we go play now.
Lord Ulfgar, may we go play now?
Ulfgar stepped over to the next tapestry. Peter recognized this one right away. It was the lady. In her portrait, she looked kind and strong, her eyes bright and glowing.
Modron is a creature of whim and fancy, song and sentiment, Ulfgar said, looking troubled. She was never meant to lead.
Peter glanced wistfully down the hall. He really wanted to play with the other children and didn't understand why they had to stand here looking at these boring portraits.
She tries, Ulfgar continued. There are moments when she seems capable. Tonight, there at the round table, I thought she would rally, make them see what was at stake. But no. Her mood shifts like the wind, distracted by something as trivial as a singing child.
Ulfgar stared at Peter, his dark eyes boring into the boy. Peter squirmed and glanced nervously up and down the empty hall. After a moment, Ulfgar asked, "Do you adore her?" Peter nodded.
"Do you wish for her love?"
He leaned toward Peter. His voice became harsh, more intense with every word.
Her attention? Her motherly doting?
Peter stepped back.
Of course you do. What choice have you? She has most certainly caught you in her spell.
But heed me. You're not but a distraction,
a substitute for her poor lost Mabon. She's but trying to plug that ever-bleeding hole in her heart. He let out a long breath. She was stronger before her great loss, before her son was stolen from her. Now she is always pining for her Mabon. That is why she spends so much time at Avalok's shrine, not for the sake of Avalon. No, it is her hope that Avalok will tell her where she can find her son. Ulfgar all but spit this last bit out. So now she brings her little surrogate child to the court, has him sing us a pretty ditty. He gave Peter a peculiar smile. And the fools beam and applaud and shed sentimental tears, then go back to wine, feast and frolic, while Avalon sinks beneath their very feet. He gritted his teeth. When I come to rule, I will put an end to their debauchery. Fairy shall become a force to be feared. Ulfgar, a name spoken in frightful whispers. We will make mankind remember their place and will hide behind the lady's mist no longer.
Lord Ulfgar, Peter said. Can we go play now?
Ulfgar bristled.
Play? Play? To run around with the boys and girls laughing and giggling. Is that all you can think of?
Peter nodded wholeheartedly. Ulfgar sighed.
Come.
How do you become one of the lady's guard? Peter asked.
Ulfgar looked down at him and smirked. Walking right next to him, Peter realized how big the boy was. He was already taller than the elves, but unlike them, he was thick-boned and solid through the chest, more like the men Peter had seen.
First, you have to learn respect for your betters. You can start by addressing me properly. My title is Lord, as in Lord Ulfgar, may I, or may I, Lord Ulfgar. Can you grasp this simple bit of etiquette?
Peter gave him a quizzical look, but nodded.
No, you do not nod to me. Never nod to me. That is only allowed among peers. Understand?
Peter shrugged. Ulfgar stopped.
Are you simple-minded? Shrugging is the same as nodding. Try again. Try what again?
No!
Ulfgar growled.
It's try what again, Lord Ulfgar!
Peter could hear the spirited shouts of children and tried to peer around Ulfgar.
Now, say it.
It, Lord Ulfgar.
Ulfgar let out a breath of frustration.
You'll be lucky if they allow you to guard the maid's chamber pot.
Chamber pot?
Never mind,
Ulfgar huffed, and pushed open the gate into the courtyard. It was night, but the courtyard was lit with hundreds of orange lanterns. Well over a dozen elven children, boys and girls of all ages, were climbing and racing around a group of standing stones. Several had blunt wooden swords and spears, and were busy raiding and defending the stones.
Hey, it's that kid, a boy shouted. The one who took the witch's eye.
They all came running over to get a closer look at Peter, circling him but keeping their distance as though scared he might bite them.
Lord Ulfgar, a girl asked, is it true? Did this boy really burn the witch's eye out?
So the story goes, if you choose to believe such tales.
He doesn't look so tough, a boy said.
He has hopes of entering the lady's guard, Ulfgar said.
The children burst out laughing. Peter looked to Ulfgar.
Lord Ulfgar, why is that so funny?
Because you're an uncouth mongrel that doesn't know the first thing about courtly etiquette.
Why, look at the way you're dressed. Who would want such a dirty little monkey escorting them anywhere? Do you know how to march? Have you ever seen a formal parade? Do you know the first thing about titles, ceremonies, manners? There's more to being a guard than just being brave.
Peter's eyes dropped. He hadn't realized being a guard could be so complicated.
Don't worry yourself, Ulfgar said. You will make a fine manure boy.
Now go play your mindless games with the rest of them. He glared at the children.
Now everyone leave. Get out of my sight.
The boys and girls all scampered back to the rocks. Peter ran along after them, glad to finally get away from the tall, brooding boy. The boys and girls stood around Peter, staring at him as though he'd just hatched from an egg.
Weren't you afraid?
A freckle-faced girl asked. Her front teeth were so big that she reminded Peter of a rabbit.
Afraid?
Peter laughed and stuck his chest out.
No, not at all.
He pulled his wolf hood up.
I'm the wolf slayer. I fear nothing.
How'd you do it?
A boy asked. His head was shaven and he had dirt crusted around his mouth, making Peter wonder what he'd been eating.
You really want to know?
Peter asked. The kids all nodded.
I'm warning you. It's a very scary tale. Are you sure you want to hear it?
They leaned in, nodding eagerly.
Well, okay. I'll tell you then. I was walking alone in the swamps when she jumped out of a hole, blocking my path. She was a horrible sight, all covered in scales and horns, her hair a nest of snakes. Her teeth were green and as long as knives. She came for me, drooling and snapping her teeth.
The kids exchanged quick, nervous looks, some putting their hands up to their faces.
Anyone else would have screamed and run, I'm sure. But not me. I snatched out my knife.
Peter picked a stick up off the ground.
And drove her back.
His face twisted up into a snarl as he made jabbing motions with the stick.
I chased her back down her stinking hole. Her den was full of demons and monsters. She set them on me. My knife broke on their thick hides, and I had to beat them away with my bare fists. The witch jumped on my back, hissing, clawing, and snapping her long teeth. I threw her across the room and grabbed a limb from the fire, jabbed it into her eye like this.
He bared his teeth, jabbed the stick at the air, and twisted it back and forth.
I could have killed her. But she began to cry, begging me to spare her life. It would have been cowardly to have killed her then. So I let her live.
He raised one finger, squinted.
But I gave her fair warning, told her if she should ever, ever attack another child, I would come back and cut out her black heart.
The kids stared at him wordlessly. Finally, the buck-toothed girl whispered,
Wow.
Several others echoed her sentiment, all wide-eyed. The buck-toothed girl scooted over next to Peter.
You certainly are brave,
she said, and gave Peter a flirty smile. Peter blushed and grinned.
Heck, I did what I had to do.
The boy with the shaven head frowned at the girl, then gave Peter a hard look.
Yeah, well, I don't believe anyone is that brave.
Peter shrugged.
If you're so brave, let's see you catch a fire salamander.
A what?
Fire salamander, the boy repeated. You'd have to be very brave to catch one of those. Their bite is as 50 hornet stings.
Why would I want to do that?
The elf boy's eyes gleamed.
Because I dare you.
The other boys and girls looked at Peter expectantly.
Well, if I knew where one was, I'd do it in a heartbeat,
Peter said, then realized all the kids were suddenly grinning.
What?
The elf boy's smile reached from ear to ear.
I can show you where a bunch of them are.
Oh.
Peter said weakly. Caught the girl's eyes on him.
Sure, okay. Show me then.
The elf boy led Peter up to a small garden pond. Wildflowers and marble stonework surrounded the pond. Wide lily pads floated along its surface. Set among the lilies were crystal globes the size of pumpkins, giving off a sparkling golden luminance. The kids stopped at the knee-high hedge.
"That's the lady's orb pond," the girl said. "We're not allowed past here."
"Yeah," agreed the boy. "If Ulfgar catches us in there, he'll have us lashed."
Peter chuckled.
"No, really,"
the girl said. Peter hesitated, glanced back down the slope. He could see Ulfgar's back. The tall boy sat upon a bench among the trees, his head down, looking lost in thought. Peter felt sure he could sneak up to the pond and back without drawing any notice.
"He's scared," the elf boy said. "See, told you he wasn't so brave."
Peter stepped over the hedge, not missing the looks of admiration. He puffed out his chest and strolled boldly up the short walk to the pond's edge. Peter had no problem finding a salamander. They glowed. A plump red one floated just below the surface in front of him, its short legs dangling beneath its long body. It was about as long as Peter's forearm, from nose to the tip of the tail. Peter wondered what the big deal was. He'd caught his fair share of frogs, and frogs were fast. The thing looked about as fast as a slug. He stepped out onto a rock, keeping one foot on the bank, straddling the salamander. He figured the best way to avoid getting bitten was to snatch it up from behind the neck, like you would a snake. Peter slowly eased his hand into the water, trying to come up behind the creature. The salamander didn't move, didn't seem aware that Peter was there at all. Peter's hand hovered above its neck. He swallowed loudly, wondering just what 50 hornet stings might feel like, hoping not to find out. Peter grabbed the salamander, caught it cleanly about the neck, whipped it out of the pond, and held it high for the kids to see. The kids clamped their hands over their mouths in amazement. Even the elf boy with the shaven head looked impressed. All at once, the salamander came to life, wiggling and squirming, slipping loose of Peter's grasp. Peter caught hold of its tail and realized his error the second it bit him. Pain shot up his arm. Not 50 hornets, more like 150. Peter screamed. He screamed and tried to sling the creature off his arm, lost his balance, and fell backward into the pond, hitting one of the globes. The globe smashed into another and both of them exploded with a loud, hollow boom. There came two brilliant flashes of light followed by a flume of smoke. But Peter didn't care about the globes, didn't care about Ulfgar. The only thing that mattered was getting the stinging monster off his arm. He slapped wildly at it, but the thing only clamped down harder. Finally, he grabbed it around the neck and twisted it loose, leaving 6 deep puncture wounds in his arm. Only then did he hear the tall boy shouting at him.
"What have you done?"
Ulfgar cried, his eyes full of outrage.
"Get out of there! Out! Out!"
Several of the children had run away, but most stood stock still, mouths open, staring in stunned disbelief. Ulfgar yanked one of the wooden play swords away from a boy, pointed it at Peter.
"Come here," he demanded.
Peter had no intention of coming anywhere near Ulfgar and made a run for it. Ulfgar leaped after him, snatching hold of Peter's wolfskin. Peter twisted away, leaving the pelt dangling in Ulfgar's fist. Peter made it only 3 strides before finding his way blocked by the courtyard wall. Ulfgar pressed in, and Peter realized he was trapped. Ulfgar's eyes flared.
"Do you have any idea what you have done? Those globes are over 1,000 years old."
Peter flinched.
"I didn't mean to."
Ulfgar bared his teeth.
"Discipline. There is no discipline. It is time Avalon wakes up, and it starts now, right here."
He jabbed the wooden sword at Peter.
"You will be flogged, and you will learn to obey. You will..."
Ulfgar stopped. His eyes narrowed. He pointed the sword at the necklace around Peter's neck.
How did you come by that?
Huh?
Peter glanced down at the star.
How did you come by that?
The lady gave it to me.
She gave you Mabon's star? Why?
He said. Then, in a harsh whisper,
has she truly lost her mind?
A kind of madness entered Ulfgar's eyes. He slowly shook his head from side to side.
No, she would never do such a thing. You're a liar. A liar!
He shouted.
A liar and a thief! Give it to me, now!
Peter clutched the star in his hand and shook his head.
You will do as you are ordered!
Ulfgar reached for the necklace.
No!
Peter cried, and grabbed Ulfgar's wrist, catching the shocked looks on the other children's faces when he did. Ulfgar's dark eyes flashed, his lips trembled, his nose creasing into a sneer.
You dare, he hissed. Dare lay your nasty hands on me?
He jerked his arm away, then slapped Peter, hit him so hard that Peter reeled and stumbled to the ground. Peter started to get up, then Ulfgar's knee stabbed into his back, knocking the wind from him, the weight of the large boy pinning him into the ground. Ulfgar grabbed a handful of Peter's hair and shoved his face into the dirt.
You will learn your place!
Ulfgar cried, and Peter felt a sharp sting across the back of his legs. Again and again, hot pain bit into the back of his thighs and buttocks as Ulfgar beat him with the wooden sword, the sound echoing off the courtyard wall. The children stared, horror-stricken. Peter screamed, and Ulfgar pressed his face harder into the ground. Peter choked on the dirt and grass.
Ulfgar!
Someone cried.
What are you doing?
It was the old elf.
Lord Ulfgar, he is the lady's guest.
Ulfgar pointed the play sword at Drail.
Have you forgotten your place, old man? Has everyone forgotten that damned place today?
Ulfgar struck Peter another vicious blow. The old elf rushed forward and grabbed the sword. Ulfgar stood up, jerking the sword out of the elf's grasp.
Are you mad?
Ulfgar's eyes flared.
Are you out of your fucking mind?
He struck the elf in the face with the butt of the sword. The elf stumbled back, clutching his nose, and sat down hard. Peter glared at Ulfgar. Gaul had taught him there was only one way to deal with a wolf. A low animal growl came from deep in Peter's throat, and the children backed away. Ulfgar prepared to strike the elf again when Peter howled and charged. He leaped upon the bigger boy's back, screeching and shrieking as he dug his claws into Ulfgar's face. Ulfgar tore at Peter's arms and spun around, trying to dislodge the wild boy. Peter bit into Ulfgar's ear, and Ulfgar screamed as blood spurted down his neck. Peter snarled and shook his head back and forth until he tore Ulfgar's ear free. Ulfgar slung Peter from him. Peter hit the ground and came up in a roll, his eyes wild, blood smeared across his face, his fingers twisted into claws, ready for more.
What is going on?
The lady stood at the courtyard entrance, Tagnost and Hissi by her side. Several of the dinner guests came up behind them, all of them staring in wide-eyed bewilderment at the two boys, Ulfgar with his hand clasped to the side of his head, blood pouring through his finger, and Peter in his loincloth, with Ulfgar's ear still clamped in his mouth, blood running down his chin and chest. Peter spat the ear onto the ground. Ulfgar stared at the ear, at his ear.
Guards,
he called weakly, then at the top of his lungs screamed,
Guards!
He shoved past the lady into the hall.
Guards! Guards!
Hissi helped the old elf to his feet.
Drail,
the lady called, and put an arm around the elf.
Drail, you're bleeding.
The elf clutched his nose, trying to stifle the blood.
My lady, I'm not sure what happened. The boys had some sort of a spat. Ulfgar was set to kill the boy. To truly kill him.
The lady looked at Peter.
My poor child.
She went to him, wiping the blood from his face with her robe, then taking him into her arms. When Peter felt the warmth of her embrace, he began to cry.
We have to get him out of here, Hissi said. Ulfgar will have him killed.
The lady didn't answer, just held Peter. Hissi gave Tagnost a fretful look.
I can take him, Tagnost said. But we must hurry.
They heard the distant call of guards.
Out the back way, Hissi said. Through the gardens. I can delay the guards. M'lady, you have to let him go now.
Hissi and Tagnost gently pulled Peter from the lady's arms. The lady shook her head.
No, I wish him here with me. He's mine. He belongs to me.
He'll be in good hands, Hissi said. Peter, go with Tagnost. He's a grouchy old goat, but he has a good heart.
The lady clasped Peter's hands in hers. Peter saw the tears in her eyes. She hugged him one last time, and Peter inhaled deeply, determined to never forget her sweet scent. Then the troll took him away into the night. All the color of that long-ago memory evaporated, replaced with the endless gray, the mud, the rot. Peter tried to remember the sweet scent of the lady, but could not. He stood and headed north, toward the witch's marsh, leaving behind Avalok's head forever listening to the earth. As he made his way down the trail through the burned-out remains of the great apple orchard, he dared to dream of a day when the flesh-eaters, those twisted, murderous demons, would at last be driven from the land. Then the apple trees could come back. The hills would again be green, the forest alive with the song of wild fairies, and he'd be able to sit alongside the lady once again. He decided to follow the dark waters of Cusith Creek, skirting along the western edge of the swamp. This would allow him to swing by Tagnost's hut. If there was any news, Tagnost would know. The old troll never failed to be in everyone's business. But there was more to it than that. Something Peter hardly recognized and would certainly never admit. He'd come to rely on Tagnost, his advice, his knowledge of history of the Avalon. He was the one fixture Peter could count on. The only stable element in his life over the long, tumultuous years in Avalon. He reached the lowlands, and the ground became soft. The witch's land had fared better than others so far, but even in the short time he'd been away, the deadly fingers of the scourge had crawled deep into her bogs. Peter moved stealthily, carefully darting from stump to stump. He didn't want to meet the witch. Not today. Peter heard approaching footfalls, someone coming fast. He slid out his knife and ducked down behind a clump of bulrushes. A tall, hunched figure came into view, strolling right down the trail, swinging a gnarled staff.
Tagnost,
Peter said under his breath, and grinned. The troll bore a thunderous frown. Peter waited until the troll was almost upon him, then leaped out.
Boo!
Tagnost swung his staff around, quicker than Peter had anticipated. Peter dove to the ground to avoid getting hit.
Peter! You impish little shit!
Peter laughed so hard he had to clutch his stomach. Tagnost gave him a furious look, grunted, snorted, huffed, and smacked him soundly on the rump.
Ow! Someone needs to beat some respect in you, despicable mongrel. And just what has taken you so long? had me worried sick.
He glanced behind Peter as though looking for someone. His face softened.
It didn't go well.
Peter sobered up. He shook his head. The troll let out a long, deep sigh.
Peter, I'm sorry. And I hate to add to your misery, but I've ill tidings of my own. It seems Avalok has deserted us this day. The flesh eaters are burning.
Shh, Peter said. Did you hear that?
Peter, the flesh eaters. Shh.
Listen.
Peter took a few quick steps down the trail, cocked his head left, then right. That had been a scream. He was sure of it. Tagnost followed him. Again, from somewhere in the swamp. Shrieking. It sounded like a boy. Peter's blood went cold. The only boys on the island were his devils. He took off at a full run, leaping heedlessly across bogs and roots and mud, knife out, eyes wild, a deadly grimace across his face. Chapter 13. Menkind. The fog swirled around them. The howls came closer. Nick picked up his spear and used it to push himself to his knees, trying to breathe through his burning throat, trying his best not to fall over. Sikiyu, Abraham, Redbone, Dirk, Dash, and Leroy formed a loose ring around Cricket's and Danny's limp bodies. Howls and moans circled them, coming from all directions. Dark shapes with orange eyes shot past. He braced the end of his spear in the dirt and aimed the point outward. Giggling, it sounded like little girls, came from all sides of them. Sikiyu's eyes were wide, and for the first time, Nick caught a flash of fear, even on Redbone's face. The fog thinned, and there in front of them, not 20 feet away, stood a little girl with long white hair and a flowing white gown. She smiled at them and tittered.
Look, she said. Little boys and girls come out to play. How precious, someone answered.
Nick glanced behind and saw another girl.
Precious indeed, called a third girl,
this one on his left. The girls appeared to be identical in every detail.
Such nice hides. Mother will surely make us new shoes. Shoesies poosies, I want a necklace of shiny white teeth. And earrings, don't forget earrings. One can never have enough earrings.
You just try,
shouted Redbone and banged his blades together.
Gonna fuck you up.
Oh my, such a tiger. Little boys shouldn't use such language. Should rinse his mouth out with a good swig of hot piss.
Most certainly, the girls agreed, and from behind them, a line of beasts crept forward out of the fog.
Nick guessed there were easily 15, maybe even 20 more of the hyena beasts that had attacked them earlier, what Redbone had called Bargast. Nick didn't see any more of the red ones with the poisonous tails, only the larger dog-sized ones with black, bristling manes. The Bargast circled the kids, growling, slapping the earth and tearing at the loose leaves. Some of the larger ones lunged at them, darting in and away, getting bolder with every charge. The devils kept their guard, trying to hold the beasts at bay.
What do we do?
Leroy cried, spear clutched tightly to his chest, his eyes darting in every direction. The Bargast were everywhere.
What do we do?
Why, you die, silly, said one of the girls,
and all three girls laughed. Two large Bargast rushed Nick, knocking the spear from his hands and yanking him out of the circle. Their claws bit into his arm as they dragged him away from the group and into the fog. Redbone let out a war cry and came for Nick, cutting and jabbing, chasing the two creatures back. Two more rushed in from behind, one slashing at Redbone's face. Redbone ducked the blow. When he did, the other raked its claws across his thigh, tearing a gash into his pants and flesh. Redbone yowled, struck out, but the Barghest were already away.
"Stay together!"
Sikiyu shouted. But it was all they could do to keep the claws and teeth at bay. The Barghest were slowly splitting them up. A long howl came from somewhere in the swamp. The sound carried over the den of clacking teeth, hoots and growls, a fearsome howl, and Nick wondered what new horror had beset them. A figure burst into the ring of Barghest, smashed right through them like a cannonball, little more than a blur of arms and legs as he spun and jabbed. Nick caught a flash of steel, and two beasts hit the dirt, one with its gut cut wide open, the other clutching at its neck.
"Peter!"
Sikiyu shouted. And there he was, with no more than his long knife, driving into the beasts, all teeth and wild eyes, never in one place for more than a second as he slashed and screamed, stabbed and howled. The beasts scattered before his blazing eyes and horrifying grin. Peter drove in, snatched up Nick's spear and sent it flying at the nearest girl. The girl's eyes flashed in outrage. She moved incredibly fast, but not fast enough. The spear hit her slightly off mark, slicing through her hair, the staff slapping her shoulder and ricocheting against her jaw. She let loose a shrill screech, clutched her face, and spun away into the fog.
"Devils to me!"
Peter cried. Big grins lit up the faces of all the devils. They answered his call with wild screams of their own and attacked, driving the Barghest back. The horde broke and fled, seeming to melt away into the fog.
"Now!"
Peter shouted.
"Get the kids! We're away!"
Peter and Sikiyu picked up Cricket, rolling her over Peter's shoulder. Dirk grabbed Danny's arms, Dash his feet, and Redbone got an arm around Nick, dragging him along. They moved quickly back down the trail.
"Peter."
A chilling whisper sliced through the fog. Nick felt the word in his very bones. There, just ahead, a single shadowy figure blocked their way. The party halted.
"Peter?" Sikiyu whispered. "Do we run?"
"No,"
he said, letting Cricket slide gently to the ground.
"There's no running from her."
The shadow melted away from the figure. Nick saw it was a woman, a shapely one, her skin glistening green and her hair long and dark, almost black. Her face remained in shadow, but within that shadow, one eye lit up like a blazing emerald, and her full dark lips parted into a triumphant smile, exposing a row of long, sharp, green teeth. Nick didn't need anyone to tell him that this was the witch. The three little girls skipped out from behind the trees and stood in front of the witch. The Barghest crept out from the swamp, flanking Nick and the devils. But that was not all. Nick heard rustling, clicking, and crackling. The sound was approaching them from all sides. The very ground came alive. The carpet of dead leaves jittered and danced. Then Nick understood, and the hair pricked up along his arms. Bugs, creepy crawlies, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of them. Big, oily beetles. Long segmented centipedes, scorpions, roaches, and spiders as big as his fist. They swarmed down from trees, up out of holes, skittering toward them like a living carpet of stingers, snapping pincers, and clacking mandibles. They circled the party, approaching to within 5 feet, twisting and crawling over one another, the ground boiling with black, shiny bugs. The witch sauntered forward a few steps, tracing the outline of her thighs with long black fingernails as she gently swayed from hip to hip.
"Little thieves, stealing from my swamp," she called, her
her voice low and husky. The three little girls shook their fingers at them.
Naughty! Naughty! Naughty!
Peter, darling, the witch cooed. You owe me a little something.
She pulled back her hair, exposing the scar of her left eye socket.
One chance, sweet Peter. I'll give you and your little playmates one chance. Give me one of your eyes, and you can all go free. Peter, dear, what say you?
Peter let out a wild laugh, a crazy crowing, like madness had taken him, then suddenly stopped. His face tight, hard, he locked his eyes on the witch.
I say we cut heads from necks, empty guts from stomachs, and slice arms off bodies.
He leaped forward and stomped a huge green beetle, its yellow guts squirting out from beneath his boot. The witch's face twisted into a snarl, her one eye narrowed to a slit.
You will regret.
Hold there,
came a cry from far off down the trail.
Hold, hold, I beg.
Nick watched a tall, stooped, goat-headed beast come trotting up the trail, waving a gnarled staff.
Excuse me, Jenny,
he said as he pushed past the witch, moving up the trail, careful not to step on any of the bugs as they skittered from in front of his large hooves. He halted between the two parties, leaning on his staff, trying to catch his breath.
So sorry to interrupt your little squabble, he said curtly. But there are pressing matters at stake.
The witch rolled her eye.
Don't interfere, Tagnost. I've no patience for your meddling. Today I will have my eye.
Come and take it, Peter snarled.
Enough!
Tagnost shouted, and slammed down his staff.
Whisperwood burns! While you fools try and kill one another, Avalon falls!
The swamp fell quiet. All the malevolence fell from the witch's face.
That is not possible.
Yes, it most certainly is,
Tagnost said.
If you drop your dramatic stage dressings, you could see for yourself.
The witch frowned.
If this is one of your games, Tagnost, it is your bones that will be stage dressings.
She raised her hands, closed her eyes, and muttered a string of curt, sharp commands. A warm breeze rose, blew through the swamp, and the fog began to clear. After a moment, Nick could see the gray clouds above and, yes, faintly, the dark stain of black smoke. Something was indeed burning.
You need only climb upon Magmel Hill to see,
Tagnost said.
That can't be,
Peter said.
The trees in Whisperwood can't be burned.
That's what I thought, Tagnost said. But somehow they are burning. And need I tell you, once Whisperwood is gone, there's nothing to hold the flesh eaters back. This swamp, or maybe Devilwood, will be next. Soon they will be burning your precious bog, Jinny.
The three little girls looked up at their mother with worried faces. The witch seemed to diminish somewhat, the fire gone from her eye. Tagnost took a deep breath.
Hear me, and hear me well. You must put past grievance aside and join together. If not, all of Avalon will be lost.
What?
The witch's eye flashed.
Are you suggesting we fight alongside these thieving brats? These human children? Why, they're no different than the flesh eaters, a taint on the land. They too must be driven out.
Tagnost slammed his staff down again. His eyes flared.
How dare you?
He growled, his words harsh, cutting.
They've earned their place among the fairy fold, paid with their blood and lives fighting alongside the horned one at Merrow Cove. And where, Jinny, were you that terrible day?
The witch waved him away as though she didn't hear, but Nick caught the pained look on her face.
Avalok's gone. The Horned One is gone, Tagnost said. It is up to us now. The fate of Avalon is on our shoulders.
Oh, stop your ranting, old goat. I've had all the preaching I can stomach.
She inclined her head toward Peter.
Tell me, Peter, does your precious lady own your soul yet? Do you dream of suckling at her teat every night?
Peter's eyes squeezed down to slits.
Watch how you speak of her. Ah, I see that she does.
The witch let out a knowing laugh.
Now, begone, the lot of you. I'll not tolerate thieves in my swamp. And you, Peter, the next time I see you, I will have your eye.
Peter pointed his knife at her.
Why wait? Here, I'll bring it to you.
Peter cut the air with his knife and started forward. The troll grabbed him by the collar.
Peter, don't be an imbecile.
Tagnost, the witch said. You ask too much. I shall never fight alongside such rabble.
She spun around and started away.
But mother, one of the little girls said, aren't we going to eat them?
Hush up and come along,
the witch hissed and left, melting away into the trees and brambles. The bugs lost their purpose and began skittering away in all directions. The Barghest leaped up into the trees and made a noisy exit. The little girl stayed a moment longer, staring at Peter and the devils with wide, blinking eyes, then shrugged and skipped away.
There,
the troll said, pointing down the valley at the billowing smoke rising from the trees far below. Peter stared.
I don't understand. I don't see how...
He stopped.
The captain. The barrels.
He spat.
The fucking barrels.
What?
The captain must have brought up oil. They're using oil.
Nick sat against a stump. He could smell burning wood, but all that mattered to him at that moment was being out of the swamp and away from Ginny Greenteeth. The troll had led them across Cusith Creek and to the top of this small rise to survey the fires. Nick took another swig of water from the pail, but no matter how much he drank, his throat still felt parched and raw. Cricket was sitting up now, propped against a stone. Danny lay next to her in the grass. Cricket didn't look so well, but she was better off than Danny. His neck and face were red and swollen, and he was floating in and out of consciousness. His glasses hung around his neck by the strap. One lens cracked and the frame bent. The troll had said that they'd be all right, that the red tails liked their blood warm and their poison was meant to paralyze, not kill. He'd told them that other than the puncture wounds, there should be no lasting effects, and in a couple of hours, they'd be good as new. Nick didn't feel like he'd ever be good as new. His head hurt. His face felt hot and swollen, and the cut on his arm burned. Peter and the troll had been arguing ever since they left the swamp. Something about the flesh eaters, about the witch, about the elves. All of it about fighting and killing, and Nick didn't like the sound of any of it. As far as he was concerned, he was done. He wasn't fighting with or against anyone. He intended to get well and make Peter take him back. Abraham walked over and joined Leroy by Cricket and Danny.
You know, Abraham said, you saved their lives. That's something to be mighty proud of.
A coy grin crossed Leroy's face before he shrugged self-effacingly.
It just happened, you know. Don't remember even thinking about it. And that there's a true test. When you're willing to risk life and limb for your fellow devils without so much as a thought about yourself.
He placed a hand on Leroy's shoulder.
You know what this means?
You could tell by Leroy's grin, he knew exactly what it meant.
You'll be getting your own sword and knife now. You're gonna be accepted as clan. Gonna be a devil.
Leroy smiled like a crocodile and cut his eyes over to Nick. He caught Nick watching, and his smile faltered. Leroy picked up a bucket and walked over to Nick.
How are you doing on water, buddy?
Leroy asked and squatted down next to him.
You feeling better? Had me worried for a bit there.
Nick croaked and winced, his throat still too swollen and raw to speak.
Don't worry about it, Nicky, Leroy said. You can thank me later.
Fuck you, you son of a bitch,
Nick thought and glared at him. Leroy glanced over his shoulder. The rest of the devils had all drifted over by Peter, studying the smoke. Leroy leaned closer to Nick.
Look, he whispered. Don't go getting worked up. A lot happened fast. It was all really confusing. You might remember things a bit different than me. That's all. Nothing to make a big deal over, right? Are we good?
Nick narrowed his eyes to slits and gave Leroy the finger. Leroy's nostrils flared, his mouth puckered like he'd bitten into something sour, the same face he'd made when he'd stomped the pixie. He grabbed Nick's hand and squeezed his fingers together.
You better listen, he hissed. I waited too fucking long for this. Put up with way too much shit. You say or do anything to fuck this up for me, I'll kill you.
He twisted Nick's fingers. Nick winced, gritting his teeth against the pain.
I'm not kidding. I'll come to you while you're sleeping and stab you in the face. Slit your fucking throat.
Nick could see he wasn't kidding.
You got it? You got it?
Nick nodded, and Leroy let him go. Nick turned away, staring down at the grass through a blur of tears.
Let it go, he told himself. Doesn't matter.
He was getting out of here, right? Leroy could call himself a devil, could wear a feather and call himself Yankee fucking Doodle for all he cared. Nick was done with him, done with all of this madness.
I'll catch up with you at Devil Tree, Peter said.
Peter, Sakiyu said, this is madness. You must not go to Lady's Wood. Elves will kill you.
Peter glanced at Tagnost. The troll waited for him at the trailhead. Peter let out a long breath and smiled.
I have to. You know it. We've only days left. The flesh eaters are on their way. The magic is failing. The scourge is eating up the last of the forests. What do we have left to eat? Soon we'll be eating each other. Like them.
He nodded toward the smoke. We'll all go then, Redbone said. Peter shook his head.
Can't. Elves would never allow it. Only chance I have to convince them of my allegiance to the lady is to go alone.
Ulfgar will never fight beside you, Sakiyu said.
Peter nodded.
Yeah, and I'll never fight alongside him either. But that doesn't mean we can't coordinate our efforts. He'll have to see this. All of us are at the end. If we fall, so do they.
Well, at least let me come, Redbone said. You know, as your official diplomatic dignitary. To carry your cane and top hat.
He grinned.
Nope, but you can help carry Danny back.
Peter returned his grin. Danny was sitting up now, but didn't look like he could walk yet or any time soon. His eyes were puffy and his swollen neck made him look like a bullfrog. Tagnost thumped his staff impatiently.
Later, alligators,
Peter said, and sprinted up to the troll. Together, they entered the lady's wood.
Okay, Peter, the troll said. The very life of the lady and Avalon depends on this. You must be on your best behavior.
I'm always on my best behavior.
Promise me you'll leave the past behind.
Peter's face hardened.
Some things can never be left behind.
Tagnost sighed.
Peter, that feud was so long ago.
Peter fell quiet. It had indeed been so long ago. He'd only seen the great oaks shed their leaves 20 times by then. Yet still, he hadn't grown into adulthood, and not a single whisker grew from his chin. But he had grown into a lean, rangy youth. Tagnost called him the wild boy of Mirkvjor, told him it was his human blood that kept puberty at bay, told him he would never be able to grow into manhood. Tagnost explained this in grave terms, as though it were a curse, a dreadful vexing. But Peter had danced about the troll's hut, overjoyed to know he'd never have to turn into one of those horrible, hairy, brutish men. He'd spent those days delighting in his eternal youthfulness, all the great forest his playground. At least, that is, until Ulfgar found him. Peter recalled how hard his heart had raced. He'd known better than to enter the lady's wood. How many times had Tagnost warned him, told him that Ulfgar had given the elves orders to kill him on sight? He'd contemplated turning back, then caught sight of the Spriggan. The nasty little goblin was in the brush, just across the creek. It waved its prize, a knife. Peter's knife. Taunting, teasing, well aware that Peter wouldn't dare follow it into the lady's wood.
"You little thief!"
Peter cried, and leaped up, splashing across the creek, forgetting all about Ulfgar and his murdering elves. The Spriggan's eyes popped open in surprise. It turned tail and dashed up the trail. Peter lost sight of it in the thick underbrush,